Welcome to Golf Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes, along with Braxton Hunter, an instructor at Fairways and Greens, also a former winner of the Tennessee Instructor of the Year and Player of the Year. Braxton, how are you?
I'm good, Jimmy. How are you doing this evening?
Doing very well. We've got a lot to cover. We've got the first round of the FedEx Playoffs, St. Jude's over in Memphis. They held that tournament. We've got local tournaments to talk about. We've got the Tennessee Professional Championship held at Tennessee National. And we've got an interview with Sophia Schubert. We had a chance to catch up with her on Sports Talk. And so we're going to bring you that interview tonight. And she was just delightful. It was great to catch up with her and to talk to her about her success and what her future schedule looks like. So that is coming your way on Golf Talk. But let's go ahead and jump to our local news and notes. And our local news and notes brought to you by Three Ridges. It's set in the shadows of the Great Smoky Mountains. Three Ridges Golf Course is one of Knoxville's premier public golf facilities. It challenges all ages. It challenges all skill levels. You can find out more by visiting knoxcounty.org. All right. With our local news and notes, we've got the Tennessee Professional Championship. It was held out at Tennessee National, and Casey Flanagan was the winner of that. He shot 14 under par, shot a final round 65. That's 7 under par. What a terrific final round. He beat Johan Koch by one. Koch shot a final round 66 and was 13 under par. Braxton, were they paired together?
No, Johan, I was actually paired with Casey, and then Johan was in the group in front of us. And Johan actually shot 30 on the front nine, so he was six under through nine holes, and actually had it to eight, I believe, through 13 or 14, and then kind of made a couple of bogeys down the stretch, and Flanagan held on for the one-shot win. Great playing by both, obviously, with 65 and 66. If you remember, Wednesday was when it rained, so we had a pretty long weather delay, and it just kind of made it that more challenging, and great playing by both of them, obviously.
Has Casey won this before?
No, this is his first professional championship.
Is this his most significant win, do you think?
Yeah, I would say that. I think, you know, it's one in our world that's kind of the, I won't say the Super Bowl, that'd probably be a little dramatic, but, like, it's our biggest one as a professional in Tennessee, and it's definitely, I would say, out of all the wins that he has had, the most significant and definitely the most meaningful, no question.
Tying for fifth, Allie Knight, 7 under par. She had a final round 68 in eighth place. Braxton Hunter at 6 under par. At 10th, Scott Moran at 3 under. Those are the local players that were in the tournament. Now, Braxton, the top four in this advanced to the National Professional Championships, Club Pro Championships. That'll be held in Albuquerque, New Mexico in April. And then the top 20 out of that group play in the PGA, correct?
Correct, yeah. And and I've played in the National before. It's an honor to represent Tennessee and to have that chance. It's kind of cool, like, to sit there and have a chance to play in a major championship, mm-hmm. and a legitimate chance. I mean, it's all people that work for a living doing golf. You know, we're not out playing and practicing every day, all day, like a tour professional is, but people that work in the game that have attained PGA membership, and it's really fun. You know, it's something that I was obviously disappointed with my performance on Wednesday, but, you know, to have a chance to play in the final group, to have a chance to win, and, you know, just keep putting yourself in the mix. It's one of those things that if you keep putting yourself in the mix, you'll get over the hump eventually.
Yeah, we'll get to Will Zalatoris later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. Motivation.
Yeah. Caleb Surratt, incoming Tennessee player, the runner-up in the U.S. Junior Championship. He won the initial Elite Amateur Series. He had a huge lead. What they did, they set this up. There are 7 amateur tournaments in which you play, and then based on those performances, and he was terrific. He was incredibly consistent along the way. He had a total of 75 points. The runner-up had 59. That tells you how wide that margin was. Bryce Lewis, Tennessee golfer, was third with 56 points. We've talked a whole lot about Caleb Surratt. Not as much about Bryce Lewis. That's pretty pretty good playing on his part.
Yeah, another great summer by Bryce as well. And it just shows you how good of a summer Caleb had. I mean, when we were trying to figure out this Elite Am series, it was brought to my attention this was the first year that it had happened. So that's why we didn't really know anything or details about it. Mm-hmm. and it comes with winning that. He gets a few starts on the Corn Ferry, and I believe either one or two starts in an opposite field PGA Tour event. So one of the quote unquote smaller PGA Tour events as well. So that was a huge accomplishment by him, and something that could set him up down the road for his career in professional golf as well.
Now, five Tennessee golfers are going to compete in the U.S. Amateur that'll be at Paramus, New Jersey. In fact, they started that today. Caleb Surratt is one of those. The others, Cade Russell, Bryce Lewis, Josh Hall, and then Jet Tickle. 312 golfers will be teeing it up. The five from Tennessee is believed to be the most ever, at least ties for the most ever. It's today through August the 21st. The first 2 days are stroke play. Then you go to match play. It was in 2013 that Tennessee golfer Oliver Goss made the finals, lost to Matt Fitzpatrick, who ended up winning the U.S. Open this year. Eric Redmond lost in 1987 in the final to Billy Mayfair. So in 2021, Surratt advanced to the round of 32. Bo Andrews, Tennessee assistant golf coach, lost in the round of 64 to the eventual runner-up. But for Lewis, this is his fifth U.S. Amateur, 2017, 2019, 2021, 2022. I'm missing one of them. But this is his fifth U.S. Amateur. That's a lot.
That's a ton. I mean, and that shows how good he was at such a young age as well to be able to qualify and to sustain qualifying. I mean, it's something that is not easy to do. I've been through that, and fortunately for me, I got into the USAM in 2005, and I felt like that was a huge accomplishment, just doing it once and getting in the one time. And obviously great playing by Bryce, and hopefully they play well this week to continue that.
All right. Also, a couple of other notes. So the FedEx Cup, it started the first playoff, and we had Scott Stallings and Peter Malnati. Stallings was 3 under par after like 9 holes. Malnati was 2 under after, I think, 7. Neither one of them closed as well as they wanted to. They both missed the cut at St. Jude's. The cut was 2 under par. And so now Stallings, though, in the FedEx Cup standings is still 54, the top 70 advance. So Stallings is still alive. Malnati, ranked 91, is not. And so they are headed, let's see, up to Wilmington, Delaware for the second round of the playoffs, the BMW. So Stallings is headed up in that direction. So as far as what happened on the money list, there wasn't much of a change. Stallings is still number 54. Malnati did drop to 101. That's their money list look. Okay, the Patricia Neal tournament going on at Houston Hills Country Club right now. And Houston Hills just had their club championships. Melissa Walsh won her 9th straight women's club championship. She was 2 over par. And Matt Emery won the men's title. He was the leader after round one. He held off a strong push from Todd Bergen. They were actually tied going into number 14. And Bergen was a 9-time winner of that. But you had Emery that won it at 4 under par. I'm not real familiar with Matt Emery, Braxton.
Yeah, he played golf at Lee University. Really good player. I believe he's kind of around 30 years old. Moved to our area and is a member there at Holston, obviously. And great playing by him. There's obviously great players at Holston, so that's a huge accomplishment. And then Melissa, who's a good friend of ours, is obviously great. Accomplishment by her to win 9 in a row. I mean, that's pretty incredible, and congrats to her as well.
So the women's net at Houston Hills Country Club, Betty K. Huckinson. The men's gross, first flight, Jake Reel, second flight, Tom Hickman, yellow tee, Early Pierce, and then the net, first place, Russ Sharp, second flight, Brett Honeycutt, and then the yellow tee, Bill Lee. So those are the winners from the club championship at Holston Hills Country Club.
That must mean Russ has his handicap kind of where he wants it then, correct?
You reckon?
Maybe he won the first place in the net.
He shot 77-81, I believe, is what he shot. So good playing by him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Knoxville Pro-Am Series at Three Ridges. So this was last week. The pros, Lee Whitehead with a 66, Allie Knight with a 67. There was a tie for first place. Allie Knight with Olin Rutherford, who shot 71, Scott Williams, a 73, Mike Hammond, a 91. And then the other tie for first was Knight, Scott Cupp with a 68. Wow. Robin Roper, 91, and Ricky Adcock with a 90. The Pro-Am Series was held today at Aguani Farms. We'll have those results for you next week. And so that's it for our local news and notes brought to you by Three Ridges. Let's go ahead and jump to our Knox Area Player of the Week. That's brought to you by Donnie Dean Cosmetic Dentistry. Don't lose time on the golf course because of your bad crown. Go see Dr. Donnie Dean for your CEREC one-day crown. Enjoy more time playing golf. By the way, I played with Donnie Dean over the weekend at Willow Creek. He shot 75.
Pretty dang good.
He can play.
He's a good player.
All right, Knox Area Player of the Week. Well, we got a couple of them that will go honorable mention. That's Melissa Walsh and Matt Emery, the champions at Holston Hills. But our winner is Casey Flanagan with what he did with the Tennessee Professional Championship. Braxton, there's a in the statewide competition, he is the leader. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, he's leading our points list for our Player of the Year. And I won't say he's locked it up, but he's pretty close to locking it up.
That's what I was fixing to ask you.
Yeah, that win pushed him over the edge by quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so, great accomplishment. I mean, great playing on the final round, 65. I watched all 65 shots, and it looked easy.
Yeah, I saw where he shot. Was he 4 under on the front?
Yeah, 4 under, and then shot 3 under on the back with a bogey on 16.
Yeah.
On 15.
Yeah, that's pretty darn good playing. Yeah, so
absolutely.
Congratulations to Casey Flanagan. All right, when we come back, we're going to hear from Sophia Schubert. She's the Knoxville golfer. She has worked with a couple of local pros, one on the short game in the mental aspect, one on her swing. We'll talk to her about that. And also know that she is what she accomplished finishing runner-up at the Evian Championship in France a couple of weeks ago. So we'll hear from Sophia Schubert when we come back. With Braxton Hunter, I'm Jimmy Himes. You're listening to Golf Talk. With Braxton Hunter, I'm Jimmy Himes. Let's bring an interview with Sophia Schubert. Our interview brought to you by Willow Creek Golf Course, one of the top public courses in East Tennessee. Willow Creek has hosted the Knoxville Open, the Tennessee State Open, the U.S. Open qualifying. To make a tee time, give them a call, 675-0100, 675-0100. So we caught up with Sophia Schubert recently on Sports Talk, and we want to bring you that conversation we had with her. And she is the highest finish of anybody that was a Knoxville resident or a native of Knoxville in either an LPGA event or a PGA event with a runner-up finish. Here's our conversation that Vince Ferrara and I had with Sophia Schubert. How busy has your schedule been since your performance at the Evian tournament?
It's been pretty busy. I left France, came to Detroit for a sponsor event with Burns and Wilcox, came home for a couple days, then went back to Scotland, played the British Open, came back here, and then I leave again here in about a week, go to Canada.
Wow, what event in Canada?
The Canadian Open.
Yeah. What did this finish do for you as far as opening up your schedule, allowing you to perhaps have a more definitive schedule and allow you to play more LPGA events?
Yes, it did a lot. I mean, it's opened up the kind of end of the season for me. There's a couple events over in Asia that are no-cut events. They only take the top 60, and then the CME at the end of the year is top 60. So as of right now, I'll be getting into those.
So you you started out at the Evian with the double bogey, and I'm wondering if you're thinking, but you bounced back from that, didn't have a problem. What was your mindset after that?
It was tough. I mean, start off the tournament with a double from the fairway was not ideal, but I just had to forget about it. I mean, my caddy and I, we looked at each other and we're like, well, we can't do anything about it now, so move on and try to forget about it, and we made a birdie on the next hole, so that definitely helped.
As I watched you Sunday, you looked so calm, you looked so collected, you had a smile on your face. So were you that relaxed, or are you a pretty good actress?
I guess my acting skills were pretty good that day. No, I was nervous. I was nervous, as I think anybody would be. I mean, starting the day before I teed off, I was pretty nervous, and then kind of got into my groove, and the nerves wore off. And then coming down the stretch, the last three holes, I mean, you have a pretty tough par three, a good par four, you have to hit the fairway, and then the last hole, pretty narrow fairway as well. So I was a little nervous. I was trying to stay focused on each shot. I knew I was up near the lead. I didn't realize that I was tied for the lead. But yeah, I was pretty nervous, but I tried just to play through it and smile and enjoy the moment.
You didn't look at the leaderboard, if I recall, until hole 14.
Correct.
Why did you wait that long?
Because I didn't want it to get in my head. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to think about it. I just wanted to keep playing. I mean, I've done that before where I've looked at the leaderboard and it never seems to work. So I glanced at it on accident, actually. I didn't really want to know, but I saw it and then didn't look again until after my final putt on the last hole.
Is the LPGA Tour more of a mental game that you might have thought before you ever got there?
It is, yeah, mm-hmm. for sure. I mean, going into it, I knew like I had the ability. I knew that I was meant to be out there, that I had the game for it, but it's mostly in your head. I mean, all the girls out there, they can hit the shots, but I think it's really about who can have the strongest mental game and who can really focus throughout the tournament and play their best.
So use the word focus. I'm mm-hmm. guessing you're not focusing on this too much, but when you have earnings of $586,262, what's running through your mind yeah. afterwards?
You know, I didn't even think about the money until afterwards someone told me. I was like, oh my goodness, that's crazy. I mean, my largest check before that was like just over 30 grand. Wow. So it was definitely huge. So it was exciting just to have that opportunity.
What does this do for your confidence?
It does a lot. I mean, we're halfway through the season. I think this is the most important time of the year to play your best golf. So it does a lot. I mean, I hadn't played my best so far. I'd been playing good, but my scores just weren't showing that. And so to be able to kind of get this under my belt and finally be in contention and have that experience, I think will do a lot going forward, because now I know that I can do it.
At some point, you had the lie in the loft checked on your mm-hmm. irons. What led to that?
Well, ball striking, I think, is the best part of my game. Mm-hmm. And recently, I haven't been hitting as many fairways. So I went to our club guy on the LPGA, and he checked them, and they were off. So that was not good. And he fixed him for me, and I've started hitting the ball a lot straighter. So it was great timing.
Wow. And how long ago was that?
That was the week before Evian.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you'd played that course before. You've played at Evian yes. before. Was there somewhat of a comfort level having played that course?
I think so. I think that's one thing that rookies kind of have to deal with, is not playing the courses like everyone else has for years. But for me, I was lucky because I got to play there as an amateur after I won the AM. I got an exemption. Yep. And then I played again for the Arnold Palmer Cup, the college team event. And so I knew my way around, and I think that really helped.
So that got you into the Women's British Open. Mm-hmm. You probably didn't play at the level you wanted to
no.
there. I wonder, was that because you had not been playing links courses before? Was there an adjustment, or was there something else at work?
I think so. I mean, I was a little tired going back home, going to Detroit and coming back, which was not ideal, but I had to do it. So I think not playing links, I'm not used to it at all. I've never played over there. So that was a huge adjustment. I was able to play better the second day. I feel like once I kind of got that under my belt, it's just totally different. You know, I'm not used to hitting it 20 yards short of the green and letting it run up. I'm used to sticking it right next to the hole. And then the bunkers were pretty crazy. Yes. I had a few where, you know, I had one knee up and had to hit one backwards away from the hole. And so that was different. But you kind of just have to learn how to take your medicine and move on.
So what is it like when you're trying to hit a shot 20 yards short of the green because you know it's going to roll up there?
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, on one of the holes, I think I hit a 5-iron like 240 yards. I mean, it rolled 50 yards. You just kind of have to plan for it. You somehow have to... That was kind of a guess in a way, too. But definitely, you have to hit the ball a lot lower out there just to avoid the wind. If you get into the wind on some of those holes, I mean, I was hitting driver 3-wood on a couple of the par 4s, which is very rare. So you just have to learn how to hit it low and play under the wind and let it roll up.
How good are you at hitting it low?
I can. I hit the ball kind of on the higher side, I think.
Yeah.
So that was different. I mean, you just have to adjust it in your stance and swing a little easier, which I'm not used to, but I was able to adjust.
So I think you shot 79, then 72. If you mm-hmm. went back to play the same course, mm-hmm. do you feel like you could shoot right at par?
I do. I mean, the first day I had a double and a triple back to back. I just got myself in a little bit of trouble in the bunkers. And I do. I really think I could go back. I mean, next year I'm looking forward to it. And the year after that, we get to play St. Andrews, the old course.
Wow.
So I know. Yeah. So that'll be exciting. And I think just getting a few more competitive rounds under my belt will definitely help.
You played at Muirfield.
Yes.
3 years ago was the first time they allowed women members. Mm-hmm. If you're aware of that.
Yes.
What was it like there?
It was really cool. I actually, they gave us a tour, my mom and my caddy and I. This guy, he was wearing a kilt. It was really cool. really historical. We got to go in the clubhouse and just kind of see all the history. And I got to play with Katrina Matthew. We were the first group off, and she hit the honorary first ball. And she's from around there. So that was really cool.
You mentioned your caddy, Brittany Hamilton.
Yes.
How long has she been your caddy, and what led to that relationship?
She's been my caddy since the start of the season, so since back in January. I actually met her. She was caddying for a friend of hers at the Tour Championship on the Symetra Tour last year. Mm-hmm. So we were paired together. And I talked to her a little bit. She didn't have a bag on the LPGA this year. She's been caddying on the LPGA for about 5-6 years. So I knew she had experience. I knew she was a good caddy. And so it worked out, and it's still working.
When I watched you at the Avion, you laughed a lot with her, and mm-hmm. so is she telling you jokes to keep you relaxed? What is she doing to make you smile and feel so comfortable in those moments?
She's funny. She tells me some jokes, and she'll tell me stories, and we'll talk about anything. We don't even talk about golf really at all until we're over the shot. We've gotten to know each other over the last few months, and so we've become friends, and we're able just to talk about whatever and laugh. And I think that really helps. Our personalities fit really well. She's kind of learning more when to say something, when not to, which is mm-hmm. tough for a caddy. so she hasn't really spoken when she shouldn't, you know, at all. So that's good. So we're really doing well together.
Have you ever had a caddy that spoke when the caddy shouldn't have?
Yes. Oh, yes. I've had some caddies a few years ago. Yeah.
It sounds like, though, you like her approach that maybe it is good for you mm-hmm. to talk about other things besides golf until you are ready to hit your shot.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, you're so focused in that, you know, 40 seconds that you're thinking about the shot and hitting the shot that mm-hmm. When you're not, I mean, you want to be thinking about anything but golf because you don't want to focus on it. And so I feel like we've done a pretty good job at that, at kind of distracting myself so that I don't think too much.
Comments from Sophia Schubert and Braxton. She talked about the importance of a caddy. I don't know that caddies get enough credit for the work that they do with their golfer.
No, and I think, you know, we had mentioned it just a little bit when we talked about it that week, the having that on the bag, you could tell it, she was as relaxed as you could possibly be in that moment. Mm-hmm. Like, it showed on her face just the situation, being in the lead or right around the lead, having a chance to win, and their relationship, you know, shown in that moment, because that could be disaster with a bad caddy. I mean, you get a negative thought in your head, or don't hit it here, or whatever, you know, the caddy that says the dumb thing at the wrong time, and all of a sudden, you know, you're gone. I mean, and she really held it together, and so impressive to see. And I think it's just one of the many things that's going to allow her to have success in the future. I mean, you watch that moment, and it's almost a parallel in a sense to what Zalatoris went through and leading up to what ended up happening with him this week. And I think, you know, hopefully it doesn't take her that many runner-up finishes to win, but I think, you know, she's going to be in the mix more just because of that experience.
When we come back, we're going to hear more from Sophia Schubert. We're going to talk about Will Zalatoris as well. We have got our topic and our golf tip coming your way also with Braxton Hunter. I'm Jimmy Himes. You're listening to Golf Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Braxton Hunter, instructor at Fairways and Greens. Part one of our interview with Sophia Schubert. Here comes part two with the Knoxville golfer that had such a brilliant performance in an LPGA major with a runner-up finish. Here is Sophia Schubert.
Sophia, with the travel schedule with the LPGA, it's pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. How much do you get to work on your game in between events?
It's tough. Not as much as I thought I would be able to. I mean, my schedule, I'm playing probably 12 more events than I did last year. Mm-hmm. So when I'm home, I really like to rest and kind of relax and recharge. So I'll take a few days off when I get home, and I'll still be working out with my trainer and then I'll try to get to the golf course after resting for a few days and get back to work. But it's hard because I'm so tired from the travel.
Speaking of travel, I saw you working on getting your pilot's license. Tell everybody about that.
Yes. You know, it's just something I kind of, I don't know, came out of the blue. I wanted something else to do outside of golf because that's all that I do. So I thought it'd be a fun hobby. So I have about 2.5 hours so far. I've got a ways to go, but I'm getting there.
What's the hour total?
40.
Okay.
40. Yeah. And then all the testing and all that. But ideally what I would love would be to maybe be able to fly to some tournaments next year or the year after that.
What Arnold Palmer did.
Arnold Palmer. Exactly. Exactly. I don't know that I'll get on the big, nice jets like he did, but,
talk a little bit about, your instructors. I think you work with two, really good instructors locally, Randy Wiley, Brad Rose.
Yeah, I mean, they're both great. I've worked with Randy since I was in second grade. Worked with Brad since, I think, my sophomore year of college. So they're great. I mean, I work with Randy mostly on my short game. I mean, he's great with short game. And he kind of plays like my mental coach sometimes, too, which is awesome. And then Brad knows my swing, like the back of his hand. I mean, he's great. He knows when to tell me to work on something or maybe when not to if I'm about to leave for a tournament and everything looks okay. So, yeah, I mean, I've got a good team.
Talk about what does Randy Wiley see in a short game that he can apply to your game that helps you?
He kind of helps me just visualize it a little differently. It's not been the best part of my game. It's gotten a lot better. My putting's gotten a lot better, but he's really helped me visualize my putts and my chips and kind of see it in a different way. And he's really good at that. So that's helped me a lot. I've definitely noticed a difference.
Have you gone through a lot of putters?
I used to. I have actually kept the same putter for the last like 2.5 years, which is rare for me.
Have you gone through different grips as far as your putting style? Overlap?
No, I haven't really changed my grips. I haven't changed a whole lot other than kind of just the way that I think about putting. So I used to just, you know, be a little more fearful and now I'm trying to, you know, make everything and put a good stroke on it. And if it goes in, great. If it doesn't, just, you know, be happy with my effort and move on.
Do you feel like you're one of the longer hitters on the LPGA Tour?
I am. I mean, there's a couple girls. You have Lexi and Maria Fossey and a few girls that bomb it. But I've really worked hard on that the last few years with my trainer, Adam Levko, over at Physiolab. We've worked hard and we've gained quite a bit of swing speed. I mean, probably 6 to 8 miles an hour over the last couple of years. And so I would say I'm kind of above average. Which has definitely made a difference. I mean, I'm having shorter irons into the greens, which helps. Yeah.
Do you know a guy named Brant Packer?
I do know Brant Packer, yes.
All right.
Oh, my goodness.
He's with the Golf Channel.
Yes.
And he told me that he was pulling against you at the Avion Tournament because he
that
wants
doesn't
you,
surprise me.
He wants you back in the booth.
Yes, he texted me that. Yeah. He did. I need to respond to him, but no, he did. We had a lot of fun. He asked me to do the US Amateur a few years ago in Maryland, and we had a great time. I mean, he went to Tennessee. I don't hold that against him, but
well, that's good.
He actually, I remember he took some tape that said like balls on it or something and put it all over my stuff, which he thought was hilarious. But yeah, no, I would love to maybe work with him again down the road.
What did you like about it?
It was just different. I mean, I'm so used to, I'm the one playing. So just kind of, it's hard to talk golf, I guess, outside of your own game. It's just a different perspective. And so it was a lot of fun being able to watch. It was hard at times because I wanted to get out there and play, but it was fun.
Do you want to play in every event you can get in, or do you feel like you have to have some rest in between your tournaments?
I feel like I have to have some rest. I know a lot of rookies going out there, they think they have to play in everything. Mm-hmm. Just to get an opportunity. I mean, they'll say, well, if I don't play, maybe that was my week. But I think you want to be 100% going into each event. And that may mean you skip a few events. I tend to like to only play 3 in a row because I'm just exhausted after that. So I would rather play less and give each one my all rather than try to play them all.
Is the LPGA schedule kind of challenging because you can be in the USA, you can then go to Europe, you can then go to Canada. Is the schedule kind of difficult to navigate.
It is. It's a little different. I mean, you could go from one side of the country to the other or one side of the world to the other, back-to-back weeks. And so that's a little different. I know here at the end of the season, we might run into that going to Asia and then having to come back to Florida the next week. Yeah.
The next week?
The next week. I think that's what it is. So that's a little challenging, but we get a little break after. So that'll be good.
How much did college golf prepare you for the LPGA Tour?
I think it prepared me a lot. I mean, I had two wonderful coaches. Ryan Murphy, he was the men's assistant at Texas. So he got to see Dylan Fratelli, Jordan Spieth, Scottie Scheffler. And then our assistant coach, Kate Golden, she was actually on the LPGA for 18 years. So I had a lot of great guidance. And I mean, I got to play at such a wonderful school, and we were constantly around professionals. I mean, I met Ben Crenshaw. He gave me a putting lesson. Yeah. So Tom Kite, he was there. I talked to him all the time. So it was definitely really a great place to help me further my career.
And what's your relationship been like with Wilson Golf, representing them on the tour?
Yes, so I actually used them when I was in high school. I loved their irons and got away from it for a little while. And then they reached out, and I tried their clubs again. Loved them. They're great. I'm using their wedges and their irons and a couple hybrids, and they've been awesome.
Cool. Have you found that you've had more sponsorship or endorsement opportunities recently?
I have. Yes, I think definitely. I mean, the exposure from Evian was huge. So that's been nice. Because on the women's side, we don't get quite as many sponsors. It's just the way it is, unfortunately. But I think that definitely helped, and I'm excited to see what maybe comes in the future.
I saw where on the LPGA Tour, they have upped the ante with some of the purses. And maybe it's more directed at majors, but I saw where there's more money involved. That's got to be enticing.
It is. It's huge. I mean, at KPMG this year, one of our majors, the purse going into it was $4.5 million, and a couple days before, they doubled it to $9 million. Huge, I know. And then the same at the British. They upped it $500,000 right before. I think it's awesome. I mean, it just kind of takes that one sponsor to do that. The U.S. Open did it this year at $10 million. And so... Yeah. People just follow after that, but I think it's very deserving. I mean, the girls are just as good as the guys, if not better, and I think it's a great thing.
So are you expecting a call from the Live Tour?
I don't know about that. We'll see what happens there. I don't know what's gonna happen with that.
Do you follow that? Do you read much about that? What's going on with it?
I see some of it on Twitter and social media and stuff. I don't follow it a whole lot just because it's not really affecting the women that much right now. Yeah. But it's interesting to see what's going on and kind of who's going and who's not. But
there's a lot of bickering going on.
There is. Yeah. There is. It's it's funny. It's great for the media, but I mean, all those guys... on both sides. They're just making so much money. It's incredible.
What's your schedule look like over the next month or so? You mentioned Canada. Mm-hmm.
I go to Canada, and then I go to Toledo and possibly Cincinnati. I may skip that one. Then I think we go to Oregon, and we're in the States for a little while before we head over to Asia.
Is your ranking such that you can get into just about any tournament right now?
Yeah, it is. I'm just wanting, you know, to get better on the rankings so that I don't have to worry about it at all. But right now, I mean, if you're in the top 60, you get into everything.
Well, congratulations on what you've done. What a phenomenal performance in the Evian tournament. Best of luck to you in your future tournaments. We'll tell Brent Packer to hold off a little bit, that you're enjoying
you.
Playing. You don't need to get behind a mic.
Not quite yet,
much.
No.
So, but we do appreciate it. Thank you so much, and best of luck to you.
Thank you Thanks. So much. Thanks yep. for having me.
But thank you very much. Sophia Hsu with Braxton, do you see her with the way she played in the major and the Evian, that she is going to be challenging in future LPGA events?
I think so. I mean, it's a momentum sport, Jimmy. I mean, you think about just some of the things that lead to more success, and it's not a cookie cutter system. I mean, it's one of those is so-and-so player gonna win all the time because they won once or had a really good finish. The predictors a lot of times aren't there. Like, it's kind of a strange deal, but in my feel, I think that was the week she needed to kind of get her ranking kind of where it needs to be, and B, just a sense that she could perform and compete with the best players in the world any given week. And, you know, aside from a really pretty good break that Brooke Henderson got on that tee shot, yeah, you know, she had a really good opportunity to win the golf tournament, and the break could have gone the other way and she could have had the major championship. So I think to answer your question in short, I think it's going to be maybe really soon where she's hoisting one of the trophies, hopefully this week or next week.
Let's get to our pro news and notes brought to you by Hoston Hills Country Club. They've got memberships tailored to families, corporations, residents, and non-residents. A membership at Hoston Hills brings together families, friends, and colleagues for sport and kinship. It's the home of the Korn Ferry Tour event. You can find out more by going to hostonhills.com. Will Zalatoris, he fires his caddy midway through a tournament. The next week he wins. I don't know if there's a correlation there. He won on the third playoff hole at the St. Jude's, the first playoff event of the FedEx Cup. He beats Sepp Straka, who is from Australia, who was trying to win for the second time. Zalatoris was first win in 56 PGA starts. But what was, and I'll just joke, go right to the playoff on that last hole, the third playoff hole. It's a par three. And so Zalatoris gets up there and he hits it right, and somehow the ball bouncing around on the brick or rocks over there nestles up against the collar off the green. And then you're thinking, okay, he's done, because Straka is going to hit it in the middle of the green. He knocks it in the water.
Yep.
So Straka has to go back and from the drop area, knocks it in the sand trap, then hits it to 4 feet. And then you've got Zalatoris debating whether to try to hit that shot. Now, wisely, he went back to hit a 92-yard shot, knocked it about 7 feet, and made it to advance. But when you're watching him contemplate that, what are you thinking, Braxton?
Well, I think you go back to the tee shot on that hole first, and Straka did not realize how bad probably that lie was. So, in other words, he saw the ball hang up. He thinks it's in the rough in a spot where Zalatoris could almost chip it in. He's going to probably make par at worst. And I think, I'm not saying he tried to go right at the hole. I'm sure he pushed that shot, talking about Sepp, but he hit the shot you cannot hit in that situation and hit it in the water. I mean, he had to hit it on the green. If he hits it, even if he misses the green long in the bunker somewhere dry, that brings in the opportunity that Zalatoris probably ends up playing that or trying to play that shot off of the rock. So I think that was the biggest part. You know, you could argue they both hit it in the hazard. They both ended up having to drop. You know, was it a huge break that Zalatoris's ball stayed up? You know, at the end of the day, he ended up dropping anyway. But I think it kind of situationally changed it. In other words, Straka's shot was a result, in a sense, of knowing where Zalatoris's ball was. I mean, you can't help but kind of be in that match play mindset right there, where you're not, you know, solely just trying to play the hole like you would in the stroke play tournament. So I think it was an interesting scenario and definitely entertaining, no question.
Zalatoris had talked about, and others had mentioned, that he had struggled some with his putting. Boy, he made some clutch putts. He has changed his stroke and has worked on his putting a lot, but he was terrific with that blade throughout the tournament, in particular making clutch putts on Sunday.
Well, and if you go back to think about the putt he made on 18 in the PGA Championship to get in the playoff. I mean, there's some clutch putts that dude has made in clutch situations, and that putt that he made on the second playoff hole, I mean, that thing, and the camera angle is perfect because, I mean, that thing broke 2 feet almost. I mean, it was perfect speed, perfect line, and dead center of the hole. I mean, you saw his ball just roll perfectly end over end. I mean, you can sit there and criticize maybe how his short putting stroke looks, and everybody's like, oh my gosh, he's got the yips. He really doesn't miss a whole lot. You know, he does ever so often from kind of that in-between distance, but he is solid as a rock when it matters most.
He had won $6.7 million. It was the most ever that a player had won without winning a tournament. now he's won well over $6.7 million with that win. And I thought it was also interesting. He shoots an opening round 71. So his fiance says, well, what do we do if you miss a cut? Then he shot 63. Yeah, kind of answered that question.
Yeah, didn't miss the cut.
Not at all. Yeah. So a couple of other notes about that. Lucas Glover gets in because some of the LIV golfers who might have been playing in the FedEx weren't, because they weren't eligible. He shoots a final round 66, so he advances, he qualifies. Wyndham Clark, this is bizarre. So he's got a chance to advance. This is one of the top 70. And then late in the round, he goes double bogey, makes two bogeys, and he knows he's done. And he ends up finishing 70.
Yeah, right on the number.
So he can advance. Yep, right on the number.
Because he's puking on the way in.
Yeah.
I will say, I have to add, like, I've got to, I won't say redact my statement from last, isn't that the proper way to say it, from last week when we were talking about the caddy situation. You know, obviously, Zalatoris made a good call in switching caddies. I mean, that ended up having a win the next week. Like, you can't argue with changing your caddy. I mean, whether it was right for him to do it in the middle of the tournament, that's debatable, but for the change, you know, obviously it was a good thing for him, no question.
Also, just a couple of notes, by the way, Straka had missed six consecutive cuts before he almost won this tournament. And what I heard on TV was, as they did their research, James Hahn had missed eight consecutive cuts before he had a win. Recently, so just a few years ago. Cameron Smith, and I'll get to a little bit more detail later, you wonder if he might have been unnerved because he shows up at the golf course on Sunday and he gets informed that he had a two-shot penalty for hitting a ball after he dropped it and it rolled into the penalty area. Can't do that. We'll talk about that later. He actually birdied the first hole, but then he did not play a good final round. And what was also interesting, it's been reported that Smith has taken $100 million plus to join the LIV Tour after the FedEx playoff. He hasn't denied it. His playing partner, early Scottie Scheffler, actually walked right in his line when Smith was lining up about a 15-foot putt. Smith stared at him. Scheffler just walked by. Did you happen to see that?
I didn't see it in real time. I think I saw the way it was posted, I saw the video of it. And yeah, it's really hard to tell. I think he actually just kind of walked in front of him. So it was kind of a weird encounter was it even his turn to putt? Like, it was kind of I don't think it was that big of a deal, to be honest.
I think it was an in your face.
Maybe. I mean, who knows? There's no question. There's no telling.
The judge ruled against the three players on the LIV Tour that were trying to temporary restraining order to play in the tournament: Hudson Swafford, Taylor Gooch, Matt Jones, Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas praised the decision. Thomas basically said, you can't have your cake and eat it too. There were six others who had qualified for the playoffs that did not appeal. So that's the latest with the LIV situation. Let's see if there was something else I wanted to mention. J.J. Spahn, who's a former winner of the Knoxville Open, had an opening round 62, final round 78. It just goes to show what a crazy game it is, but he was playing so well and just struggled that last day. All right, LPGA in Northern Ireland, Maya Stark of Sweden wins it. She shoots a final round 63 that included 10 birdies. The par was 73. The Champions Tour of the Boeing out in Washington, Miguel Angel Jimenez with a 58.
You got it.
Something like that. Shot a final round 67. He finished at 15 under par. And he has now won. That's his third win of the season on the Champions Tour, his 12th in his career on the Champions Tour. And he's won 21 times on the European Tour. And in Omaha, Robbie Shelton gets the win with a final round 65. Get a load of this. He had 99 putts in the 4 days of the tournament. Norman Zhang had 94 putts when he won the Wichita Open. That's incredible.
Unbelievable.
To have that few putts in a tournament. All right. Those are our pro news and notes. Let's get to our topic. Brought to you by Sevierville Golf Course. Two of the best courses in the Smokies. They feature the Highlands and the River courses. They've hosted the state championships. They've hosted high school state championships. The South Atlantic Conference Championship. For tee time, call 865-429-4223. We mentioned about Cameron Smith earlier. And I'm sorry, I was jumping ahead. The next player that's going to be a first-time winner of a major, we saw Matthew Fitzpatrick break through with that. Who is the next player that's going to win a major for the first time? Do you like Zalatoris? Is it Cam Young who has been threatening? Is it Sepp Straka? Somebody else. Who do you like to be the next first-time major winner?
I'm kind of going somebody that's not on the little list right here, and I'm going to say Xander Schauffele. I think he's kind of the one, in my opinion, that's sniffed around enough, and obviously winning the Olympic gold medal should kind of semi-qualify as a major championship, but doesn't. And I think he's kind of, he has the game and kind of the skill that is needed to win a major championship. So I'm going to go him.
I got to take Zalatoris.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
He's a runner-up three times, I think, for majors.
Yeah, so, yeah. Agreed.
Okay. All right. That is our topic brought to you by Sevierville Golf Course. Let's get to our golf tip brought to you by Fairways and Greens. Practice made perfect. They handle club fitting. They also have the top tracer to illustrate your distance, your apex, your curve. You can play virtually on several world-famous courses. Call 777-GOLF. That's 777-4653. All right, know the rules. Cameron Smith penalized two shots after hitting the ball in the water. He took a drop. The ball rolled to the hazard line. He played it from there. That is a two-shot penalty. It wasn't disqualified, which he would have been under the former rules for signing an incorrect scorecard. Your thoughts on what happened with Cam Smith?
I mean, there's almost two sides to it. I think, to me, I don't understand how somebody in that moment, whether it be somebody that's on the production crew with NBC Golf Channel or that there's not some kind of rules official somewhere that's like, hey, dude, you can't play it. It's still on the penalty area line or whatever they call that now, the hazard line.
Or your caddy.
Yeah, or somebody. And, you know, I'm glad in a sense that now doesn't equal disqualification. And then I go to the other side, too, of I'm not a big fan of the rule, you know, hey, add two scores or two shots from your score yesterday, day later. You know, it's like, which one are we going to have? Like, are we going to have the guy on the couch calling in, you know, hey, his ball was on the hazard line. Go check that, you know, and then in the old rules, he could have been disqualified. He was disqualified for that. I mean, thank goodness, in a sense, that wasn't the case. But it's just a silly error on his part, honestly.
You know, you don't have in a football game, you might, after the game, you've said, oh, you know what, that guy stepped out of bounds. Okay, the next day, we're going to change the score.
Yeah.
No, you don't do that. To me, they ought to satisfy it that day or move on.
Yeah, or move on. And then if he has like a moral, like, hey, it was kind of questionable, then he would withdraw himself. Like, I just don't think that, you know, that's part of our honor and integrity in the game.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought that was an interesting situation. Know the rules. Hey, Braxton Hunter, thank you. Appreciate it. Always
Thanks,
great
Jimmy.
To catch up with you. Thank you for listening. This has been Golf Talk.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.